He's a man of many musical tricks, a dude who, when you put on his record, you're hearing his touch on all the takes, a multifaceted talent powerhouse producing his vision from every angle. He's a man that brings it in the studio, but then captivates from the stage. And he's the first guy I saw master the art of accepting that everyone was on their damn smartphone and turn it into a modern-day lighter sing-along. He's Aaron Bruno. Good morning.
Wow, that was very poetic.
You're the first person that blew me away by taking people's captive looking down at their screens and turn it into something that could be a participant rather than just as a distraction.
Cool. Yeah, that's what I'm here for.
Hey, you seem like a space guy. Are you stoked about this probe that's flying around Jupiter, Juno?
You know, it's really interesting. It feels very sci-fi, so that's always cool for me, being a child of 80s sci-fi and heavily inspired by you know, all the Star Wars and E.T. and all that. So it's always funny when fiction becomes reality.
Yeah, man, that's cool. Speaking of going that far back, I'm sure you're a dude who's young enough to have piled into a car with your pals after like high school and put on a Rage Against the Machine CD. Now you're gonna head out on the road to support the dudes and their pals from Public Enemy and Cypress Hill and the legacy band Prophets of Rage. What would high school Aaron Bruno think about that, and what does adult you think?
High school AB, as I should call it. It's always hard to say your own full name, you know?
Sure.
It feels kind of douchey, but I would never think that would happen. I really wouldn't. And that's been one of the most incredible things about this journey I've been on, and, you know, on the success side of things. It's been so neat to play with a lot of the bands that were heavily influential and instrumental in my songwriting, and more importantly, just, you know, emotionally supportive to whatever I was going through at that time in my life. So for me, you know, when Rage came out, I was really into hardcore music and punk rock and hip hop. So, you know, a lot of Metallica had become big at that point, I remember, but, you know, I was listening to music that was, and I don't mean to sound too pretentious, but I was listening to music that was, you know, even heavier than Metallica at the time, the underground of that. And so when Rage hit, to me, it was a breath of fresh air, because I knew Zach De La Roca had come from the hardcore scene, and that was where I was kind of living mostly as far as my music goes and the music I was playing. But they did it in such a way that it was, I don't want to say poppy, but more accessible to the masses. And I honestly thought it was a Beastie Boys song the first time I heard what I believe to be Killing in the Name of on K-Rock, our local alternative station, and it just blew my mind. I didn't know what it was. I was very intimidated. Okay, now the rest of the world is going to get to hear a little bit of where I came from in the hardcore scene. I was kind of jealous, you know. You know, when you discover something underground, you think, you know, it's yours. It's your little toy you don't want to share with anyone. So yeah. I'm like, okay, it's going to be all out in the open now. And, you know, I believe that Rage Against the Machine is the only group that truly walked the fine line of involving rapping and or screaming with heavy grooves and guitars. What came after that, I felt, was not as cool. So they're the only authentic version of that I consider, you know, on the level with Radiohead, you know. Especially the second record, you know, it's kind of like their OK Computer in a lot of ways. I've been listening to it a bunch lately and brushing up on it. And so to answer your question, going full circle, I would have never thought that was something I would do. You know, we played with a bunch of bands that were so big to me growing up. It seemed untouchable. Because when you're at that age, you know, you think of, especially back then in the 90s, you think of a band on the radio as just billionaire gods that you couldn't even, you know, cross paths with in a mall, right? So to cut to now, it's unbelievable. And Tim Comerford, the bass player, has become a dear friend of mine along the way, sometime in the last 5 years. So even, you know, even sometimes I would pinch myself when he and I would be having a beer. I'd be like, wow, this is, even though we're friends, you know, and I don't want to freak him out, but I am tripping out a little bit inside that I'm hanging out with a bass player from Rage Against the Machine that I loved so much growing up. You know, he wrote one of the coolest riffs of all time, which I believe to be Bulls on Parade. And from what I understand, he came up with the bulk of that opening and closing riff. So that's what my old self would think. I wouldn't believe it. And now I kind of just told you what I think about it now. You know, it blows my mind. And then, you know, I must tell you that Public Enemy was equally influential to me as a big middle finger, you know, in the air to the man in a lot of ways. And growing up in a fairly boring suburb, it was, you know, rap music was sort of my only true punk rock, because punk rock had already exploded and, you know, hit the mainstream in so many ways. So for me, rap music had not hit the mainstream yet. It was anti-music, and Public Enemy was leading the way for sure, along with NWA and various others. But Public Enemy definitely struck a chord with me.
Well, it's really interesting to me that you say this, because, like, you're talking about underground and about the stuff, you know, like when you said there's a piece of it that's yours, you don't necessarily want to share it. Well, now you've worked with us a ton, and we're a big mainstream radio station, which is, you know, I'm proud of that. But at the same time, we've raised a bunch of money for, like, youth care and helped homeless kids. You've played at Key Arena for Deck the Hall Ball. You've even done summer camp before, and we're having you back this summer, which is rad. But while some artists start with, like, a bump from the radio, then at the first chance go to do their things their own way, what is it about working with this format that makes it a good fit for you?
Well, you know, any chance you get to expose people to the songs you've written is a huge opportunity and a huge blessing, because God only knows that great song, by the way. I didn't mean to do that, but that I've written hundreds of songs that no one heard. Didn't really get to see the light of day, so any opportunity I get for anyone to hear anything I've done is an absolute blessing. And a dream come true, and mind-blowing still. You know, I always wake up and go, wow, am I sure this is really where I'm at? People know my music now? You know, it's a trip for sure. And I think that if you look back to the 70s and even the 80s, pop music didn't necessarily have a sound, really. Like, when you think of pop music today, you're probably going to think about Beyonce or Miley Cyrus or, you know, Bruno Mars, and some of that, you know, some of it's better than others, but, you know, back then it was really what popular music was, whatever it was popular. So for a song like Sail, for example, to cross over into the mainstream in that way was, I never thought would happen. And when it did, it was just proof that many people wanted to hear that kind of song. So I don't think of, you know, alternative as the only cool place to listen to music, or pop as, you know, the only cool place to listen to music, or college radio, or whatever you want to call it nowadays, or even just different blogs. I think that there's enough information out there now, and people are smart, and they're searching for music in all sorts of different ways. So if you hear a song, it doesn't really matter what the number on the dial really is, does it? It just matters that you like the song.
Sure.
So, I'm open to all genres, even country music. I thought I would never really love, and I've been enjoying it a lot lately. I tend to like the older country more, although there are a couple new, I think, like Sturgill Simpson I love a lot, and there's some others that are okay as well. But to be prejudiced sort towards, you know, one kind of radio station or another is feeding back into the problem that lies within the world as a whole, I think, you know, so... And you're talking, you know, this is coming from someone who doesn't believe in genres musically anyways. When I made my first record, I couldn't really quite put a label on what it was that I was doing. It's just the music I wanted to make, you know, and I was just doing it the best I could.
It definitely feels like it, man. There's like I hate that throwing this word around, but there's an authenticity that, like, doesn't, there's no decided style in it, because it feels like it's coming from one guy. So, I mean, I feel like you really have broken out of definition of genre like that. I realized I was standing in the middle of the Indianapolis Motor Speedway watching Spanish dudes on motorcycles whiz by as Sail is playing in the background, and that is a result of having Red Bull with you. Have they been able to open doors for you and push you in a different direction that maybe radio doesn't?
Certainly any time that the brand has, you know, involved any of my music in some of their athletes, some of the video clips they've done, it's been great for sure. Because I mean, I love surfing, and you know, I grew up playing your mainstream sports like most kids in America, but then at a certain point I realized how much cooler skating and surfing and snowboarding and all that really was. Red Bull, you know, the brand, was definitely a good fit for my music, at least at first, too, because I thought, well, no radio station is probably going to play this stuff anyway, so maybe we could bust out in other ways. Having said that, you know, they definitely help. I'll never take any credit from what they did as a brand. So, again, any chance you get for your music to be played in any format, unless it's, you know, straight up disrespectful in some way, I think you got to jump at that opportunity. But I got to tell you, I mean, one of the great miracles of this project is that it seems to speak to people in a different kind of way, where they end up using these songs for various other videos, and so many different things have gone viral, from Sale being used in the Jeb Corliss video, which really wasn't connected to Red Bull. It was just what the director chose to use. And I met him in Switzerland, actually, and he just felt like the song was very appropriate for that dive. And then, you know, all the way to the cat video, which was obviously some cute little thing that so millions of people saw. Since now, with this record, our song Run has had over, you know, a couple hundred million different vines, which could have never been planned. It's just, you know, the people seem to speak without us really having much involvement. We kind of put the music out there, see what happens, and then try to ride that wave. So that's why I ended up doing a radio edit for the song Run, and I changed the lyrics a little bit to make it sort of a positive twist on what naturally is taking place out there in the world.
We're excited to have you back in Seattle in August. Merrymore Park, a venue that you've played before at Summer Camp of the Past. A couple important questions. One, do you still have the incredible tight white pants you wore on stage those few summers ago?
I don't think so. And in fact, I looked at a photo recently of that was a show where Kenny, our keyboard player, and myself, we did something that we talked about in the studio, but I never thought it would actually come true. I remember when we were messing around with some songs and starting to, you know, rehearse, I said to him once, I'm like, man, this would be cool if, because he was the engineer that was in the studio that I was working at when I developed a lot of the A1 Nation songs. And I'm like, man, it'd be fun if we went on tour one day, this became an actual band, and I did a stage dive, and then you did also, and then we met in the middle and gave each other a high five in the middle of the crowd surfing. And that actually happened at that show, and I have a photo of it. The only bummer is I was wearing those white pants and a baggy black V-neck. But, you know, it was so, I think it was pretty hot around that time. But no, I don't know where those pants are, but I'm not afraid to wear white pants if it's appropriate.
And as a kid, what summer camp, if any, did you attend?
I think we had just a generic camp called Sports Camp, honestly. That was pretty much it. But, you know, when summer came around, once I fell in love with surfing, that's all I did the whole time.
Aaron Bruno from AWOL Nation performing at Summer Camp Night 1. Thanks for calling in, dude.
Thanks for having me.